talking?
I'd ask.
Ask him about it.
I'd ask Brian about it.
All right, 4 o'clock, and call into order the regular meeting of the Board of Directors of Montgomery County Hospital District. First, we'll start with invocation.
Let's pray. Dear Lord, we just ask you to be with us today. Help us make decisions that are best for the community and for the people who work here, Lord. And we just ask you to guide us and show us what you would have us do to glorify your name in everything we do. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one indivisible.
All righty, let's do the roll call. Bob Bagley?
Here.
Jackie's not here. Jason's not here. I'm here, Charles Shirley.
Kelly Inman.
Chris Grice.
Robert Hudson.
All righty. Do we have public comment? No public comment? Okay. Time for a special recognition.
Yes, sir.
Hey, good afternoon. We have 2 years of service awards and then one employee of the month award. And I will start with years of service for 20 years, which is incredibly impressive. And this is going to go to Deputy Chief Kelly Gonzalez. Couldn't be more proud of Kelly. She's worked her way up in the dispatch center, and now she's currently the deputy chief. She's done a great job in alarm, and we're very proud of her. 20 years is huge.
And our second is a 20-year service also for Miss Colleen in records. I'll butcher her last name, so I'm not going to say it.
Okay, and so for Employee of the Month, I'm going to invite Deputy Chief Spencer Hall to come up and read the nomination.
Did I say deputy?
Yeah.
District. Everybody's a deputy today.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. It's there, or
okay. Yeah. Good afternoon. My name is Spencer Hall. I'm a District 1 Chief in the Conroe-Willis area. Over the last 2 or 3 years, I've had the opportunity to work alongside Rafael Espinoza in numerous critical calls. About a month ago, I was at a local ER, and one of a well-respected, tenured Conroe Fire Department lieutenant came up to me and said, I need to talk to you about one of your crews. So I kind of held my breath, and then he proceeded to tell me a story about leadership, communication, and clinical acumen. Without summarizing what he said any further, I'm going to read the email that he followed up with later that evening. I'm writing to formally recognize in-charge paramedic Rafael Espinoza for his exceptional performance during a complex incident yesterday evening. Our unit was added to a call initially dispatched to Medic 15 for a reported fall prior to their arrival. After reviewing limited notes and recalling previous calls to this address, we upgraded our response due to the lack of information and known risk factors. Upon arrival, we encountered an unresponsive urgent patient obstructing the doorway in a single-wide trailer. After forcing entry, it was immediately apparent that we were managing two patients at once. The residents had no power, resulting in limited lighting and extremely confined work conditions. Throughout the incident, Mr. Espinoza demonstrated outstanding leadership, communication, and scene management. He effectively established command, clearly directed all personnel on scene, and appropriately triaged patient care. Recognize the complexity of the situation, he requested a second medic unit while simultaneously providing efficient and effective advanced life support to a critical patient. At the same time, he guided crew members to initiate care for a second patient, despite having little or no patient history from the bystanders. Mr. Espinoza's clinical knowledge, situational awareness, and ability to lead under challenging circumstances exemplifies the highest standards of patient care and professional excellence. I have been with Conroe Fire Department for just over 20 years, and I've worked alongside many highly skilled paramedics. In my professional opinion, Mr. Espinoza's performance on this call set a new benchmark for excellence. Come on up here, Rafael. Thank you.
Good evening, y'all. I actually feel like we kind of get to do two clinical excellence awards tonight because we got fire department praise, someone who's been around 20 years in the county and setting new benchmarks. We absolutely reviewed Rafael's call, and it was exceptional. So we kind of get two for one tonight. But I'm going to change gears a little bit because this one is actually a little bit different. And also, in a lot of ways, exactly the same. We responded to an unconscious hypoxic patient. But the crew that responded was a dual EMT crew. So scope of practice is markedly different than Rafael's. But as we've grown here in the county, EMTs have become a vital part of our service and a vital part of the care that we provide to the county. And this patient was critically ill, just like Rafael's. And within 10 minutes, the patient had airway adjuncts, oxygen applied, defibrillator pads applied, a blood sugar checked, and a second unit was called for assistance. And when the medic unit arrived, the email that we received on this call from the in-charge paramedic that was summoned, she was very honest in the email and said, I received I read the call notes, I saw what was happening, and in my mind I thought, oh no, you know, this is not going to go well. And what she saw was a perfectly managed patient, all the critical vital signs addressed, and they got an excellent report and history from the EMTs on the truck. And so what both of these calls together represent to me is the value of collaboration. That's collaboration with our fire partners, collaboration within our service between our paramedics and our EMTs, and then getting those patients stabilized and transported to the hospital. That's the goal in a system of care. And so this is the first clinical excellence award we've given to an EMT crew. But when you look at what happened in both of these situations, a life was saved. And that's the goal out there every day. And when we can make that happen with teamwork, as a medical director, I couldn't be prouder. So I want to recognize Christian Zudis and Hannah Taylor.
Very good. Let's start with our monthly report. CEO, I guess Randy's not here, so Melissa?
You get me. I'm going to go briefly over the things that aren't included in someone else's report, thereby not stealing their thunder. The accounting and procurement departments are continuing to implement and correct issues in the Oracle accounting and procurement software. All interested departments had a procurement process update meeting to discuss issues and best practices. Several issues are currently being identified and addressed through this team. As you may be aware, the legal request for bid is out. It went out on the 13th. All questions are due in by March 8th, with seal proposals due by noon on March 18th. After those arrive on March 24th, there will be interviews set up for the board to attend however they wish to do that, if it's necessary, and then we'll be able to vote. Y'all will be able to vote on council in the meeting.
Okay. How many responses did you get?
They won't be in until the 18th at noon. So it's just posted now, and we don't register for that one, so we don't know how many people have requested packets.
Got it.
How many did we request? Because I think I saw an email.
We, the board, or we, MCHD?
MCHD actually send out specific requests.
They did, and I don't have that answer.
Okay.
Donna, do you?
It's four.
I think it was one requested by the board and four others, but I'm not for certain on that four.
Okay.
The senior executive staff and our payroll person attended a health insurance meeting to give our mid-fiscal year update and look at any changes that potential for the next year. So we'll have information back for them. This is the year that y'all had asked us to go out to the market, and so they will be doing that for us to bring back pricing. And we had a meeting last week with an AI consultant. AI is becoming a big part of our software, as well as would be helpful and efficient to improve our data analysis. And recognizing that we're not experts in this field, one of our GPOs does have some people that do that, and so we had an initial call with them. We'll be meeting next week to go over the information we received in that call and look to where we want to go in the future with that. And with that, if you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
I do.
I got a quick question. There was an email that came in. I don't know if it came in to everyone on the board and whether you guys got it, but it has a list of questions, and it's like 18 different questions, and they're very specific. Did you guys receive it?
What are the questions regarding?
I just went to the board.
I didn't get it.
About operations here, and a lot of them. I'll share it with you guys
sure.
After the meeting.
Okay.
That's the reason I was asking. If you already got that.
I have not.
I think you just went to the board.
Okay.
Since we have a question.
So I know that Randy wrote this up, but I'd like for the public to hear a little bit more about why we are no longer continuing to maintain ACE accreditation for the 911 call center.
Sure, that's a good question, and it was on my list to address from Mr. Johnson's report. So there are two accrediting bodies that we have maintained accreditation with at MCHD. One is CAS, and CAS is for ambulance services across the United States, and it was an organizational-wide accreditation that expired at the end of the year. ACE is an accreditation specific to dispatch centers. That one was up for renewal this quarter. We made the decision to not renew both accreditation bodies going forward. As you know, we're growing at a rate now that's pretty rapid. We're trying to experiment with telehealth. We have a tiered system. We're working with a squad at Station 27 to try to see how that deployment model works. So as we experience these growing pains, we want to have the flexibility to be able to make mistakes, learn, grow, to figure out what's going to be our path forward. In alarm specifically, we want to look at some different quality metrics specific to cardiac arrest and how quickly our dispatchers can instruct and have a bystander perform CPR in the public. That's the number one way to increase survival from a sudden cardiac arrest in the public is early bystander CPR. And when you're doing accreditation, this is nothing against either of those bodies. We just want to focus on things that are specific goals for MCHD and specific goals for our community. And then once we feel like we get to where we want to be in, let's say, 2030, for example, then we'll go back and revisit accreditation. But they're a little bit limiting because accreditation is very strict, and there's a lot of things that you have to follow. And we want to have some flexibility as we experience these growing pains to figure out and to trial some things that will work and will not work. And that was kind of our philosophy behind both of those.
Well, I know that we worked hard to get both of those accreditations over the years, and I just didn't want it to I didn't want anybody to feel like we weren't trying to maintain the standards that we had to assure them that we're still doing the best that we can do and saving lives.
Yep, that is a good thought, and I say this very humbly to all the accrediting bodies. They do a great job at getting a good organization to have best practices for baseline. We're really trying to push it beyond that.
Above the line.
We're trying to push it above the line. We're trying to be like one of our core values. We're really trying to be excellent, and we're going to have some stumbles along the way, but at the end of the day, we think that we're going to be even better than we are today for our community.
Okay, thank you.
That's a good question.
Campbell?
Yes, sir.
Chief EMS?
Yes, sir. outside of the accreditation, just a couple bullet points. We will have our next new hire training session. We'll start March 11th. That'll include 17 EMTs and then five folks for alarm. We got a little bit of practice last month with the threat of looming winter precipitation. Fortunately, we were on the good side of that and didn't receive near the amount of precipitation that was predicted. That storm was unique. There was varying forecast, and we ended up on the good side of that. For us, it was good practice. We have a lot of new people at MCHD who haven't experienced what it's like when we go into continuation of operations or disaster mode. So it was good practice. We did all of the pre-meetings, we did the state meetings, we did the regional meetings, we brought in a shift early. We went through all of the disaster prep and operated as if this were going to be a significant winter weather event. Turned out it wasn't, and we got good practice from it, and nobody's pipes froze, and everything was okay. So we'll take that as a win for the organization. And then lastly, we're making final preparations for what is always a busy special event season. We're getting ready for Ironman, which is a very big event in the Woodlands. Woodlands Marathon is this weekend. That's a little bit of practice for Ironman for us operationally. And then we'll have the Montgomery County Rodeo. All of those things kind of happen within the next 60 to 90 days. So we're making plans to be prepared to staff those events across the county. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I got one.
Yes, sir.
I didn't want you to feel left out.
That's okay.
So there was a discussion on old ambulances. What was the decision, the pros and cons for keeping them or and using them for training? I know the cons were possibly maintenance, but the way I looked at it was that whatever maintenance we're going to do is still going to be cheaper than purchasing brand new ones to just use for training.
Correct. So Mr. Bagley's referring to in the report, we've been auctioning off our high mileage end of life ambulances. And one thing that we've started to recognize as our workforce has less experience driving, that we're seeing an increase in fleet accidents, mainly around lateral clearance. So we tend to hit mailboxes and fire trucks and curbs, and our driver training happens at a cone course in an ambulance that's fully equipped. And multiple department managers at different times said, don't get rid of these old trucks, let's use them for driver training. We could rent U-Hauls or something like that, but let's get something that's a little closer to real life. So that if we, you know, one thing that we don't do well is we don't get the ambulance going 45 miles an hour and lock up the brakes. And you don't want somebody to do that the very first time with the patient in the back. Now we can keep some old ambulances, and if they get a little bit of more wear and tear, it's not going to be in service the next day on a call. So we're going to use them for driving. We can use them for training. So it turned out there was a lot of opportunity for us to hold on to a couple old ambulances for some pretty good operational and training needs.
So we are going to hold on.
We are going to hold on to them. It'll be shop 34 and shop 24. I'll follow up.
One of the things, and when we were talking about the freeze coming from Colorado and many years of ice and snow, we don't get that here. So they don't get much training. So do we do any water training for like heavy rains and stuff for them to be able to dry, and that's just another part of it that we could use these ambulances for, so that when they do lock up at 45 miles an hour and the roads are slick, what's going to happen?
Yeah, so how would it react?
Don't lock up at 45 miles an hour when the roads are slick. So.
Right, that's a good thought. That is a good thought.
Something else that might want to go into training if it's not already there.
Yeah, and there's an opportunity for us. We do our driver training at the Conroe Fire Training Tower, and there is the potential. It's a good thought. Maybe we can have them wet that concrete area, and we could do some wet surface maneuvering. It's a good thought, Mr. Bagley. Okay. Good questions.
That's all I had.
All righty. Ms. Miller, CEO.
I want to start with thanking Mr. Bagley and Mr. Grice for attending the open house at New Station 24 on January 31st. Both of them were able to address the crowd and even do some touring and talking in our suite to people that were there visiting, and it was very well attended, even though it was very cold. Our ambulance-covered parking is finally finished on the east side of the fleet bays. You see a picture there. It allows for additional 12 ambulances to be parked under cover or chassis, as well as a regular-sized truck or Tahoe. We're changing our access control system hardware here, and we're coordinating with IT and other departments regarding the new server and the cutover plan and how to ensure that everybody's in the system with the access that they need. Radio's been busy. They had lighting system repairs at two towers, completed the move and turn up of IP station alerting at New Station 24. IT had a lot of work there as well. And tested and aligned 65 new portable radios. IT is always watching what's going on in the world of computers, and they are now working diligently on purchasing budgeted computers now as we are in what's being called Ramageddon, which is the quadrupling prices of RAM or memory for computer systems because of the high demand of AI. The prediction is this will go at least through 26 and maybe as far into 2028. So they're staying on top of that and looking to get those ones that we have budgeted this year ordered as soon as possible. Laserfish continues to work with Donna and Records to finalize the process to find, audit, complete, and the document destruction of records past their retention date. This will help free up our servers and keep what's going out equal to what's coming in, because right now coming in is a lot faster than going out. So trying to maintain that storage space. I have public health report in here. This is the first time it'll be in this book. So if there's anything that y'all want to see or anything changes you want, MagnaBot, would you stand up? This is MagnaBot. She's our EPI and Preparedness Division Manager. And she's got lots and lots of stuff that you may or may not want to see, but we started out small. So that report is there. The most exciting thing to me is on January 24th, the MCPHD board met for the final time. They reviewed financial data for the year ending September 30th, closed the MCPHD bank account, and formalized the dissolution of the public health district. And Brett, you can correct me about closing the account.
The accounts have been approved to be closed. Actually, the operating account for public health is still open as we work to redirect a couple of payments. And once that happens, we'll close that account.
The budgets for 27 DSHES grants have been submitted. They're under review by the DSHES, and they'll get back to us if we need to make any edits or anything for those budgets in public health. They have a strong focus on the World Cup preparations with regional and state partners, updating plans, participating in trainings, exercises, and remaining current on public health threats. As you know, people will be coming from all over the world, countries all over the world, not just necessarily to where their team's playing. Lots of people, lots of potential for infectious diseases to spread during this time. So they're really diligent on making sure they understand what the threats are. Have anything you'd like to add, Megna? Nope. All right. Any questions?
I don't have a question, but the county judge talked to me today, and he said, thank you very much for taking that over. I said, yeah, I'm not really sure.
Well, that was very nice.
Yeah.
All righty. Healthcare services report, Ade.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Hello. You have a copy of the board report, and so I'll just make a few highlights for January. We received 177 applications for January, so that's an increase from our volume for last fiscal year. Our enrollment numbers went down, but that's not surprising based on our trend, how we trend usually in December, January. We closed out the month with 312 clients, but we're expecting our numbers will slowly start, you know, ramping up over the next few months. We received 58 new clients for the program, which is great. And also we're starting to see more traction with our online application through Laserfish. We received 74 applications through the system. So that's pretty good for this time of the year. And also we are seeing more traction in hospital referrals. So we're getting more applications from the HCA hospitals. And so we're excited about that. Hopefully we can maintain and sustain that growth. I think Luis has done a good job with communicating how to submit applications and just trying to clean that process up through communication. So we're glad to see that, and we'll just keep monitoring that process. But that's all I have to report. I'll be glad to take any questions or comments.
Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All righty. Mr. Allen, update on accounting.
Yes, sir. So accounting staff continues to work on the transition to the new software. Currently focusing on budgeting and the fixed asset module. The tobacco settlement is due March 31st, and so they're working and preparing that. Just to kind of give you an idea, it's currently budgeted at $800,000. Last year we received $1.1 million for the tobacco settlement. For the Amylin Supplemental Payment Program, that's also due March 31st. Data has been sent to PCG, our consultant, budgeted at $1 million. Last year, we got $956,000. For billing, continue to analyze work processes with the new software. It's going very well. Still working out a few issues between Experian and ImageTrend, but are making progress. We got a meeting tomorrow, which should see some more progress. Collections. In January, we're $2,075,000 compared to last year, $2,225,000, so down a little bit. Trips haven't grown quite as much as expected. And then also this is January, February. We hold claims waiting for deductibles to be paid so that we're paid and we don't have to transition that deductible to patient pay, which is many times no pay. And then days in accounts receivable at 88 days compared to 94 last year. That ticks up 3 days since January. But again, that's related to holding the claims as deductibles are met. Be happy to address any questions you may have about the report.
When the tobacco settlement every year, is that trending a certain direction, up or down, or
it's really held pretty good over the last several years. It's been higher early on, and I call early on like FY11, FY12. It was more than that, but at one point it was down to like 400,000. So it kind of varies based on return on that core principle.
I got it. Okay. All right. Thank you. All righty. Our next item 8, consider an act on district policies. Make a motion to approve HR 25313 ambulance services for MCHD employees.
Second.
I have a second for Mr. Bagley. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All righty. Item number nine. Yes, Jace, go ahead.
Good afternoon. So last month we had an agenda item to talk about conversion of DC power at the tower sites. Y'all approved moving forward with four of those. We brought two items back. So I did some research on what we think that would cost if we budget next year. So it looks like that would be a a 5 to 7% increase, so, you know, $10,000 to $16,000 is what it would be. And I'll let Brett kind of speak to where, if we were to approve this, where the funding would come from.
I believe we'll be able to find this in our fuel for autos. We're doing much better than budget at this point, and that's where I would plan to get it.
Very good.
Yeah, so the ask is $221,805.54.
Okay. Make a motion to consider an act on the conversion to direct current DC power at tower sites per MCHD RFP contract FY2023-0402.
Second.
No, for two additional, so there was
two of them.
Yeah, two additional sites, I guess. And so there are 100.
We've approved the other ones already, right?
Yeah. The other ones have been approved.
We did four last month.
Right.
Did we have a second?
I seconded.
Mr. Bagley seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Passes.
Thank you, sir.
Ready. Item 10, Kelly.
Consider an act on health care assistance program claims from non-Medicaid waiver 1115.
Second.
Do have a question. I know the numbers are supposed to come exactly out, and there seems to be a single dollar difference. Is that a typo? Is that... I know a dollar is very insignificant in terms of the amounts of monies that are here, but.
Where do you see that, ma'am?
On the monthly budget, December 2025, it says $161,047, and then the monthly budget for January is $161,048.
Actually, I think it is actually budgeted that way, as it was divided by 12 and just spread across the months.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. We got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Number 11, Kelly.
Just a minute, glasses. Consider an act on ratification of voluntary contributions for uncompensated care to the Medicaid 1115 waiver program for health care assistance program claims.
Second.
Second from Mr. Hudson. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. All right. Mr. Allen, CFO report.
Yes, sir. So you do have the
financial report before you. Cash at the end of January was $73,238,000 compared to last year, January, $69,436,000, an increase of $3.8 million. In terms of the income statement, we are doing very well compared to the budget. At this point, total revenue is at $54,381,000, total operating expenses at $26,226,000. Overall revenue over expenses are ahead $24,307,000. So a couple things in terms of other revenue, you see it is showing up red year to date. And that's due to some timing. This expenditure represents what's happened through January being compared to the total budget. And so things that have not happened yet, for example, are the tobacco settlement, the ambulance supplemental payment program. A lot of interest revenue hasn't hit yet. So that's kind of why you would see that difference. Also, it's early in the year, and so we are very ahead of revenue over expenses because tax revenue has been heavy, right? So December, January, February, very heavy tax revenue months. Those will start to lighten up, and we'll see it flip where expenses begin exceeding revenue, and you'll see this number start dwindling. But beyond that, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to address them.
Yeah, I do have a question. Under this new accounting presentation, there's not a direct comparison between actual and what you were expecting each month. It just compares to actual to the total annual budget. Would you have an idea of where we are at? I see your line down here. It says 93% of the year-to-date budget, but where are we at, where you projected to be at this point in time in the fiscal year? Does that make sense?
Yes. And so a couple things, and you make a good point, and it's not the same presentation we had before. The actual year-to-date isn't being compared to the total budget. With regard to that last column where the green and the red, mm-hmm. it's being compared to 33% of the total budget, so the first 4 months. And so that's kind of that comparison, and that's where we get the timing issues. For tax revenue, at the end of January, we were 93.1% collected year-to-date and about 79% for the total budget. As of today, through February, we did make up some ground in February, although there's still a few more days to collect. But so far in February, we've collected almost $8.2 million compared to a $5.9 million budget for February. So at this point, even though there's days remaining, we're about 138% collected for February. For a year to date, 98% collected, and of the total budget, 94.5% collected. At the end of March will really see a drop off in the tax revenue collections. In fact, we're already seeing it in February. Where now I'm seeing 30,000 to 50,000 a day. Earlier in February, there was a $1.2 million day. And so, but the end of March, we'd expect to be about 96% collected for the whole year, and then we'll see that remainder come in or get close to it over the remaining months. I don't have a calculation right now in terms of revenue over expenses, in terms of where I'd expect to be. I can give you that. I just don't have it today.
No, that's okay. You filled me in with what's happened so far in February, which is significant and compared to what's as of January 31st. So
yes, sir. Yeah, right. We have got early on in February over $2 million that normally we would have expected to get in January.
Okay. Any other questions? All righty. Thank you. Mr. Grice, item 13.
Make a motion that we consider and act upon the Valley View Consulting extension of their contract.
Have a second?
Second.
Mr. Hudson, second. Any comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Item 14, Mr. Grice.
Make a motion we consider and ratify the payment of the Montgomery County Appraisal District of $116,604.
Have a second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Bagley seconds.
Can we get that in pennies to deliver to
him? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Number 15 has been tabled. Item number 15 has been tabled. Number 16, Mr. Grice.
Yeah, I make a motion that we approve the invoices in the amount of $3,532,382.26.
Have a second?
Second.
Mr. Hudson seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And number 17, Mr. Grice.
Make a motion that we approve the moving to surplus for the 2019 Clayton Homes model. This is the mobile home, I guess, that we bought that's over at the fire station that now that it would cost too much to put a fire suppression system in it, so we can't use it anymore.
Okay.
Correct.
Love our government.
With this item, if y'all choose to surplus, it has to be offered to Caney Creek First, that was part of the deal in purchasing it, so we will let them know and see if they would like to make an offer to purchase, or would like to purchase it, because they get first pass.
So you'll let us know?
Do we have a second?
I second it.
I apologize.
Did you have a chance to look up what we paid for that thing?
We paid $49,900.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
I'm going to abstain since I'm part of that organization that might benefit from the...
I have.
Mr. Hudson abstains. Number 18...
Can we go back? I know we went ahead and voted on that, but there's more surplus. So are...
Oh, that's the next item.
It's another agenda item.
It's number 18.
Okay. I missed the... Yeah. I only had 17. Everything was back behind it. So you're going to let us know about that, though, next month, though, what happens with that. Okay.
All righty. Item 18, Mr. Grice.
Make a motion that we approve the surplus and salvage as presented.
I'll second it.
And Mr. Bagley seconds. Any comments?
I do.
All righty. Go ahead.
So last month, we talked about... the ambulances and holding one for the county to be able to use. Can you give us an update on that and what was determined to transpire?
Yes, sir. After the public health meeting, they went over and identified one of the units that they want to have, and we're working on drafting what the legal language would be for them to have the unit as is, where we're not responsible for maintenance and upkeep. And once that language is approved, then it'll be a transfer over.
Okay. And we're working out payment for it, or is it just going to be a gift?
That, I don't, forgive me if I misspeak, but I don't think that was clear in the motion. The one we did with the constables, it was a transfer, and the legal language was it's one government organization helping out citizens at another government organization, so it was a simple transfer. We wouldn't sell it for more than what we've been getting at auction for them, so I think that's maybe... Yeah, the will of the board
decision.
That was
one of the things we discussed on how we were going to transfer it legally for them to be able to.
Would you like us to charge them?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we talked about it during the last meeting on how it was going to be transferred, if there was going, if they were going to have to pay or not. And I would just like to know how that clears up.
I guess my question would be, if we give it to them and then they use it and then they get like New Caney, they won't have first dibs on buying the building back, but we have first dibs on getting it back and auctioning. I mean, we should get something from it.
We did it with the constable, we just said it's your unit, you can do, we don't want it back, we're not going to do anything with it, we don't want to be responsible for it, and we gave it to them because it was in the benefit of the taxpayers.
I'm willing to do that for this one.
You're good. But I think that's a board decision.
I just wanted to find out there weren't any problems.
Oh, no. No,
for
no.
us to be able to do that, because
no,
I've seen other places, other agencies that have transferred and they've made people pay for it. So
yeah.
Why would we not request that they pay the same amount of money that we would potentially make at auction? Because those monies, yes, even though it's for the community, those are still funds that we need to run the budget.
I can support either decision. I think it's a board decision, ultimately.
I'm personally okay with giving it away because it's still taxpayer funded. It just came out of one pocket rather than the other. And if they can use it, as long as...
Leonard, is there a difference between surplus and worthless?
Yes, that would be the question.
Surplus, you normally have to sell. Salvage, you can give away. Secondly, whenever you transfer items to another governmental agency, you can receive a reciprocal benefit. It does not have to be the payment of money. It can be the reciprocal benefit that they're helping people out in that area in mission with the MCHD. So you can craft it to either sell it if you want to or to transfer it.
All righty. Is there any other questions, comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Number 19, consider an act on the Secretary's report, the minutes from the January 27th regular board meeting. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? All righty. At this time, 4:45, I'm going to move us into executive session. I read something, I'm sure. Which part do I read, Chris? This right here? Okay, the Board of Directors of Montgomery County Hospital District reserves the right to adjourn into closed executive session any time during the course.
It's on 20.
Oh, got it. Okay. Convene into executive session as authorized by the Texas Open Meetings Act to deliberate in closed session on the following matters authorized under Texas Open Meetings Act. In regards to Section 551.072 of the Texas Government Code for deliberations about real estate property, and under 551.071 to receive legal advice both regarding property on 200 South Kennedy Street, Willis, Texas, and other comparable properties. All righty.